step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air performance number 716. My name, as it is most days, is Lisa Sheps. I am your intrepid host. And my lovely co-host is Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Guess what, everybody? We stream live at KOOP.org. You better stay right where you are.
Hurry, hurry. Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
It is Wednesday, April 19th, 2023. On the show today, we have the Bat City Bombshells and their show, Dancing with Mary Jane, in celebration of 420. And then later on, we're going to be talking to Jarrett Productions and Mother of the Maid. And of course, we are going to have lively discussions of theater around Austin, New York, Chicago, London, and Lisbon. Don't go away. Think of me often is what I want to say right now.
Yes, when you say goodbye.
When you say goodbye. Well, that was Think of Me from a little show called Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
Which ran on Broadway for 35 years.
35 years! My brother's best friend, his aunt has been in the show almost the entire time. I think she was out for like 3 months or something.
Well, that's amazing. Well, it closed. It played its last performance last Sunday,
which was quite emotional for the Lord Weber.
Well, I have to tell you, say what you want about Phantom, and I am not a fan. Tum, a Phantom. Anyway, wait, hold on. Let's stop right now. We haven't done our little banter that we do at the beginning. We just jumped right into talking about stuff.
Yes, yeah,
and I have to say, hi, Nicole.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you doing?
I'm okay.
That was a wonderful show that Kim Simpson gave us, the International Folk Bazaar.
I love me some Kim Simpson.
Yeah. Let's introduce the folks that were here. We heard them laughing just a moment ago. We have people from the Bat City Bombshells. And we have Violet Sky. Hi, Violet.
Hey.
Sherry Baum.
Hello.
And Mistress Moon.
Hi.
Hi, how are y'all? If I talk to you, like, is that a first name, last name thing? Or do we always go by Mistress Moon and Sherry Baum and Violet Sky?
You can call me Sherry.
Sherry, okay, good. That's
you
very
can call
sweet
me Violet or Violette.
Violette, I like
Violette.
That.
Violette, I like
people
Violette.
Call me Moon.
Moon, oh, okay. Uh-oh, that's confusing for me. Because
you're welcome to call me Mistress.
So what
you
are your thoughts on Phantom, folks?
Oh, my goodness. I saw it in New York. I think it's
New
iconic.
York City?
New York City.
Okay, just want to make
I'm
sure.
I'm a lover of Phantom.
And you are.
Dave Cryer was in the cast.
Okay.
And he and my father did theater together at DePaul University.
In Chicago.
That's Chicago? In Indiana.
In Indiana. That's oh,
and
DePaul.
And my father
in
said
Chicago.
That he beat him for roles many times.
There you go.
But decided to go into business to support his baby, me.
Okay, well, good, good, I guess.
Yeah.
So when was the first time you saw Phantom?
That was it in New York about...
Well, it ran for 35 years, so yes. It's a 35 stretch of time.
Yes, and I actually like the old rock and roll Phantom movie that they did with John Williams.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm going to say no to that one.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't see it. So
you
I'm
didn't
just,
see
I'm,
it, but...
I'm prejudging it without
I love all
it.
Things Phantom.
When did you see it?
I saw it about 12 years ago.
12 years ago. Okay. And did you and John Cryer was playing the Phantom?
Dave Cryer, his dad.
Oh,
John
okay.
Cryer is his
okay.
yeah, son.
So confusing.
Yeah.
And Violet and Moon, are y'all anything about Phantom? Anything about Andrew Lloyd Webber?
love Andrew Lloyd Webber. I
He speaks highly of you as well.
That's wonderful. Tell him I said hello. I honestly can't say that I have seen it live.
Okay.
I have only seen the movie version. I know, sad. It is one of those those things that the music is just so iconic, but also like many things that were made 35 years ago, I think sometimes the themes are read a little bit differently today.
We just had that conversation last week.
Originally created 35 years ago. So I'm wondering what the take of the current generation is on that storyline. And I've heard it from both sides, the criticism, but also the appreciation that it's such a classic.
Well, you know, say what you want about Phantom. You can love it or hate it or somewhere in between, but it changed Broadway. It was very much like Hair was, like Rent was, like Hamilton was, like... It changed everything, and there's a really interesting article about how Broadway was not doing well before Phantom.
It wasn't.
And then all these shows came over from Great Britain and the West End, and Phantom was like the first one, and it was the first, and I remember I was in New York at the time, and I never saw it. I never saw it in New York the whole time I was there.
See, I did, and I was young. It was the beginning of 35 years. And it was a moment. It was a whoa.
Visually, it's stunning.
Moment. And it's not just the chandelier.
I find the best part is the boat.
Yeah, there's so many other moments in it that it was really something different.
Yep. There's some wonderful articles out there this week about Phantom. And one was written, an op-ed by Andrew Lloyd Webber himself, talking about just Phantom, how he felt about it, what's going on right now with the death of his child, where he thinks theater is going. And it was very interesting to read. But I found interesting, you know, I am addicted somewhat to podcasts. and I listened to This American Life, and this year they replayed... Or this last Sunday, they replayed a whole bit from the orchestra in Phantom, and then it had aired back in 2020, and then they did a little update afterwards for the closing. But it's so interesting to hear this. So I actually knew a very, very dear friend of mine that I lived in the same building with, hung out, played in the pit at Annie back in the 80s, and I've always thought of pit players, which is what you call musicians that sit in the pit, mm-hmm. as really talented, very tops in their field musicians. Evidently, that's not quite amongst musicians, that's not the feeling. They feel it's kind of schlock. And they were talking to all these musicians, especially there's like one guy, French horn player, mm-hmm. who played from 1981 or whenever it opened all the way to the final performance. And they're talking about the dysfunctional family inside the pit and how uncomfortable it is in the pit, because it's a large orchestra.
So there's a woman who's been touring with the Lion King for almost 20 mm-hmm. years, who's the flautist. And this whole same conversation kind of like... totally interesting.
My little heart broke because to me it's like, God, I get to play in the pit of these shows. It's wonderful. But they were like saying, it's, you know, no, they had dreams of the Philharmonic. They had dreams of a recording career. They had all these dreams. And I went, oh, I never really thought of it that way. And they would like, it was a 9-to-5. This one guy, I think it was the French horn player, you know, somebody asked him to play something from Phantom after doing it for over 25 years. At a party outside of his time, he said, I can't remember what it is.
That's funny.
He says, I just go in there and read the music.
No one wants to do their day job at a party.
No. Yeah.
But it broke my heart for these musicians. I don't know. But then they also told it was like a little snippet, like less than a minute, but this young man, this was, I guess, back in the 80s, he got a job. He was a musician, just really working hard, trying to find anything. He would get some sub time on, I forgot what show, but then he got an 8-show-a-week. He got a permanent mm-hmm. spot in the pit, I think, on Phantom. But how excited he was and how that changed his life. I mean, he had gainful employment. I do know on the other side, a very dear friend of mine was in Wicked, and for him it was like a job. He came in, you know, did mm-hmm. his gig, and he said, I'm going to retire from this job, and And that kind of made me sad too. I'm that way after when I was doing theater and I would do runs after like the third or fourth show, I go, I'm tired of this show. I'm ready for the next one.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's what's fun about burlesque is
we know that feeling well.
We do one and done. Yep. We do one show and we move on to the next thing. And
that's right.
You have what we all kind of call creative ADD. You're like ready. You're ready to go on to the next number. Sometimes when I'm rehearsing the number for this show, I start working on the next show.
Yep. Oh. Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, and, that's true.
And we are going to talk all that about that in just a few minutes, and I can't wait. So I was wondering if I had. I'm looking at a Phantom. There's a link at Offstage On Air on a Phantom of the Opera fan article that shows like all these people that have all this fan stuff of Phantom.
So I was happy to see that he was there because he had said he wasn't going to be there. He wasn't going to make it after his son passing. He said he wasn't going to be at the, yes.
Did he go? I didn't
and
know.
He went.
Oh, good.
And I was like, you know, with he's had a lot of heartache. He dedicated the show to his son that he just lost.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but he, you know, I was glad to see that he was there and have that moment. You could see it on his face. It was very bittersweet for so many different reasons, but mm-hmm. I was glad he was there to have it.
Me too. Well, so in honor of Phantom, so that, and I just discovered, and you might like this, well, if you like the music of Phantom of the Opera, it's called, the album is called, it's not on here, but it's the world, it's Phantom World version, and it's got it in Korean, Hungarian, Spanish.
I think it's like two dozen languages.
Japan.
It's been translated.
It's like a four. Well, it's been translated, but this is on one album.
Yeah, no, I'm saying. Yeah. So you have this repertoire and categories that you know.
So that's what we're going
to
play.
Catalog to choose from.
Yep, that's what we're going to play on our interstitial. Where it's going to be all. You won't hear it on Offstage and On the Air again. We're going to be all Phantom all the time. But we're not going to do English. So we did have two openings on Broadway.
Yeah.
One of which was a bona fide hit, and the other of which was a little mixed. The first one I'm going to talk about is Fat Ham, written by James Imes, but it's spelled James I. James.
Oh.
But I. James, I-J-A-M-E-S, is pronounced Imes. Jesse Green made it a critic pick. On the Did They Like It aggregator, they had 9 favorable reviews, 2 middle of the road and 1 negative. And well, I'll just read the description in Did They Like It. Juicy is a queer Southern college kid already grappling with some serious questions of identity when the ghost of his father shows up in their backyard demanding that Juicy avenge his murder. Sound familiar? But here's the rub. Revenge doesn't come easy to Juicy, a sensitive and self-aware young black man in search of his own happiness and liberation. From an uproarious family cookout emerges a compelling example of love, loss, pain, and joy. So this is obviously the Hamlet story told in the backyard of a black family. So
it's fantastical. And I'm not surprised by all the reviews that came out. I mean, the buzz has just been like the word on the from everybody who's seen it or been a part of it is just like, be ready.
Yep, I believe Carl Gonzalez saw it in the Off-Broadway. Yeah.
I think you are correct. I think we did hear about that.
And I believe it was at the Public.
I believe you might be correct on that one, too.
I think so. So here's some little bit more about the from Jesse Green's review about the plot. Juicy's melancholy has a more immediate source. Within a week, the death of his father, called Pap, his mother, Tidra, has remarried, and to no less a bully than Pap's brother, Rev. On the day of the wedding, Pap's ghost arrives under a gingham tablecloth to pin the crime on Rev and spur Juicy to revenge. Both Pap and Rev are played by the same actor, Billy Eugene Jones. Yet whether considering murder or suicide, Juicy, like Hamlet, waffles. So, looks like something I would really like to see or produce, one of the two. Do y'all know anything about Fat Ham? Have you heard about this at all?
I have not yet. Oh, sounds interesting though, right?
Yeah.
I would like to see it for sure.
Yeah. So it says, Fat Ham, this is again, Jesse Green. Fat Ham is certainly clever in its parallels with Hamlet. The barbecue is a neat translation of the funeral baked meats, which Gertrude and her new husband did coldly furnish forth the marriage tables. The melancholy.
You had fun writing this, right? Someone had a lot of fun writing this.
The melancholy prince's ploy to prove Reverend's guilt is no longer a play, wherein to catch the consciousness of the king, to catch the conscience of the king, but a game of charades. And then other Polonius is a church lady. Her kids are Rabbi and Opal, or no, Opal and Larry. Instead of Ophelia and Laertes. It looks just like a lot of fun. They liked everybody in the show. And they said Spears, and I'm trying to remember who Spears, whether he played Hamlet or not. I can't remember. And I
don't remember
anything.
Either.
Anyway, shined more than anybody else. Other... critics said, Brittany Samuels of Broadway News said, the script explodes with erotic humor and youthful energy, but it's grounded by its exploration of black queer love and Iams' intrepid control over both Shakespearean and Southern speech. It's interesting.
Kind of love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The New York Daily News, Chris Jones said, a left-leaning deconstruction not just of Hamlet, but the tragedy itself. Robert Hoffner of The Wrap said, as far as that wonderful ghost, much of his magic derives from Maruti Evans' set, Dominique Fawn Hill's costumes, Bradley King's lighting, Aaron Chu Neely's hair and wigs, Michael Solomon's sound, and above all, Skylar Fox's illusions.
Illusions.
I was like, illusions.
Yes. And Naveen Kumar of Variety said, it's the funniest and most invigorating new show of Broadway. Fat Ham, I really want to see it.
Indeedy.
I'd be lying if I said I don't have a copy of the script sitting in my email right now.
Whoa.
Just saying. Just saying. And the other opening, of course, we're running low on time again. Camelot opened. The Revival, which is playing at the Vivian Beaumont in Lincoln Center. I like the Vivian Beaumont Theater.
I do like the Vivian Beaumont Theater.
I think the last thing I saw there was War Horse.
Oh.
That's the end of the story. So Camelot is the King Arthur story. I don't think we need to go into the plot. I didn't realize that the show Camelot, which was written by Lerner and Lowe originally, mm-hmm. and in
that
this
Robert Goulet did forever.
Did forever.
And played almost every role forever.
Forever. But not name, not anymore.
No. Not anymore.
It was based on The Once and Future King. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't realize. I loved that book when I read it, and I just was a big Merlin fan. And we talked about it last week, I think, on the show. Maybe.
It was the last ever week before. I don't know.
I don't know.
This was my Aunt Mimi's. My Aunt Mimi loves the music from this.
The music is wonderful. The mm-hmm. the weakness has always been the book.
Mm-hmm. But the music, it's one of those. The music is just so good. It's pretty.
It really is, and there's some standards in there. Which I'm just, that's just not cover. What are the,
it's not going to come to me right
but
now.
But they're in here. I know, poor me.
It's not my favorite cup of tea, so it doesn't sit in my library.
So anyway, this book was rewritten and adapted by one Aaron Sorkin. And Aaron Sorkin, people love him or don't love him. I tend to be a fan, but they said even he couldn't help this. And he tried to make it a little bit more political. Philippa Sue plays Guinevere. And I love me. What are you laughing at? Nicole is sitting here laughing.
Even he couldn't help it. Like, that's just awful. Someone said that. I'm just dying.
It's true. But they do say lacking the songs to support them. So there was no songs that worked for the political, because there's a political bend to the story.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, but there's no songs that talk about them. All the songs.
Yeah, you can't rewrite the songs.
Yeah. And it says, lacking songs to support them, Sorkin's historical enhancements fall flat. Mm. I forgot to say that.
I bet you Philippa Sue makes them sound pretty. I'd love to hear her.
Love me
singing
Philippa
all that.
Sue.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one of the podcast people, you know, her nickname is Pippa. Mm-hmm. But I have a podcast that I listen to a lot about Broadway, and they call her Pippa. I don't think you can call someone by, this is me speaking. I call her Philippa Sue because I don't know her in order to call her Pippa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. Anyway, did they like it? They had four thumbs up.
You're right on that, because
my close friends and family, like, you call me Nikki. If someone doesn't know me and they call me Nikki, yeah. I'm like, oh, excuse you.
Yeah, I don't think Nick. I have the right to call
or
her
Or Nick. Like that, I really, but it's, I'm Nikki as much as I am Nicole and Nick.
Yep.
Not to everyone.
So anyway, they had four thumbs up, four thumbs down, and seven middle of the road. So...
Not my jam.
No, but I would go see it. I have a
list of like 10 others to go see.
Exactly. There's so much good things to see.
That's unfortunate.
You know, of all the...
I started putting in my requests for my house seats for this summer for my shows.
Well, I don't... and we'll talk about that. I want to hear what your requests are.
Okay.
But Camelot, I don't think... I may have seen it... in summer stock somewhere ages ago in the 80s, but I don't think I've ever seen
it. I was dragged to it a whole bunch as a child. I'm scarred by it. It endears me that people that I love that are gone love it. So it connotates lovely thoughts. I don't want to see it.
I don't think I've ever seen it live. Just going to say that.
No.
All right.
You might be luckier than
we have to choose what we're going to talk about, but of course I have to talk about Schmigadoon. Because I'm going to do that every week till this. Anybody else a Schmigadoon fan?
You got your hair episode in, right?
Yeah, well, it's a mishmash.
So, I know, but that was this.
We
one?
Talked about that last week, I think.
No, it was coming up. It was in the preview. You said it hadn't aired yet.
Oh,
and I said,
oh.
So that's what this episode was. You just
watched,
right?
So they don't. Well, I think I don't remember. So there is the group of people that is Hare and Burger, but they're sort of a combination between Godspell and Hare and Pippin. Are the three
you know
music-
what? Those are like three kind of groups that would be fun hanging out together, actually, when you think about it. I would love all the
So there was a duet worlds. With the Burger character and
That's
the,
Aaron, right?
Yeah, it's Aaron Tveit and who's the cabaret? What's her name? The Sally Bowles character, who is Jenny. And I keep forgetting the girl's name that plays her, the pop star. I think she's a pop star. I don't know. You would laugh at me when we come up with it. Anyway, they did the Pippin Love duet there. That we also did, we got a little bit of Sweet Charity, Daddy. We had a Daddy number.
Daddy
so
growing up in San Francisco.
And then we got a little Priest, finally.
Sweet Charity. My brother got lost in the pit with the orchestra during the intermission of Sweet Charity.
There you go. How many times?
Speaking of the orchestra pit.
If I had a nickel for every time that happened to me.
Just one of that 1984, that one with B.B. Newworth and...
Yep. Again, Sweet
Debbie
Charity
Allen.
Is very problematic, and that's one of the ones that probably really shouldn't be on stage anymore. But I love the music. I mean, there's not a song in that show that I don't love.
There's some great dance numbers and some great music in it, for sure.
Okay, we're just going to blast through some of these other things. Tony's host is going to be Ariana DeBose.
Yes.
Second year
they just
in a row.
Have her hosting all over the joint.
Right? Yeah.
She's hosting in England, hosting here. No, here, then England, then here, then she's everywhere.
They talked about the Merrily We Roll Along documentary, which
has been rolling along.
The title is The Best Worst Thing That Ever Could Have Happened. It was on PBS like a few years ago. You can see for free, but it's going to be available for streaming. Worth seeing. I don't know how much they're going to charge to see it for streaming. But if you haven't seen it, it's a wonderful documentary talking about that show. I know this will make you happy that they're going to do a Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor film.
No.
And I know I was being sarcastic. I am a big fan of
Joseph.
I'm
not happy with Andrew on that one, but I do love the Lord Weber because he gave a superstar. Yeah. That one I'm totally, but the
So this is
the narrator.
Same
Red
director
and blue,
that's directed all the latest musical films, John M. Chu. Daniel Goldfarb is writing the script for this, but it'll be...
I know a lot of people like it, so I was excited for them.
Because
I made a comment going, that's going to make a lot of people happy. Just not my jam.
All right. I think the last thing we're really going to have time to talk about here is there's an article in the New York Times called Live Streaming Made All the Difference for Some Disabled Art Lovers. And it talks about during the pandemic, we all started live streaming stuff, and that made everything so much more accessible. And, you know, that affected all of us at the time. But now that we're coming back and we're back in the theaters, the people that have mobility issues or were staying at home, which are suddenly part of the group. And I know we felt part of the group because all those award shows and those fun things that typically We didn't see Broadway Backwards, all these things, Broadway Barks, were all online that we could see finally, because those are the kind of things that if you're not in New York on that day, you can't go.
It also is more accessible, not just for people with mobility issues, but hard of hearing and deaf, because you could have closed captions on everything and not have to go to one show or to hear. Like it changed the game, man.
It changed the game, comma, but it's reverting back. So there's less and less streaming options. And this is just an interesting article. And as I read it, I just want to...
The Jimmys are going to stream.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. I want to read this one paragraph, which I think is interesting. It says, quote, live streaming, quote, opened up the door and showed us what is possible, said Celia Hughes, the executive director of ArtSpark Texas, a nonprofit that aims to make arts more inclusive and accessible. The door, she said, has begun to close again. Mm. Celia Hughes I actually texted her. I said, I'm so happy to have seen your name in the New York Times. And she said, what are you talking about? And so I had to text her screenshots. And she said, oh my God, I did that interview so long ago. But anyway, I just found it sad that they had some interviews with some people that for whatever reason, lots of different reasons, not just mobility issues, but similar hearing and other things that they couldn't see it, or geography. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame. I mean, Ground Floor Theater tries to stream everything we can.
You streamed a lot. You were really, really good about making things accessible. And you still have shows. I was like, when the pandemic closed, still has been a streaming
option. We stream everything we possibly can. And I do find it sad that for Sanctuary City, which opens up a month from today, actually, they would not allow us to stream. And interestingly enough, when I asked the rights company, which is TRW Rights, they were like, I don't understand. What do you mean by stream? And I explained it to them.
What?
And they said, we'll get back to you. And they came back and said no. But I think streaming is important. And folks,
I think that was a very interesting answer. We should explore more.
I know,
time. Like,
but again, go to offstageonair.com. I think that what I say in the link says streaming changed things forever. Click that link and you can read this article from the New York Times that was written by Neelam Bohra and Wendy Liu, or you could just go to the New York Times and search for live streaming made all the difference. Kind of sad, but kind of good at the same time. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a break. And now we're going to listen to Mascarada. From Phantom, which would be the Spanish language show.
I know, but what country? From Spain?
I don't remember.
There's a lot of Spanish-speaking countries, my friend.
I know, but I was just talking about the... Stop giving...
Look,
I don't
European,
know.
Latin American, Central American, where are we?
We'll be right back. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello,
streaming live.
Hello.
We're streaming live at koop.org.
So in answer to the question we were talking about earlier, you understand what stream is.
I do.
Stream live.
Was there a question? Oh, it's true.
Yes,
I do understand what stream is.
Ba-dum-bum.
So let's talk to our guest at the Bat City Bombshells, and we will reintroduce the founder, I think, and one of the producers. Oh, you is Sherry Baum.
Yes, I'm happy to be here.
And then one of the producers is Violet Sky.
I'm a producer.
Sherry Baum. And then what are you, Violet Sky?
I am a mature performer.
Oh,
and choreographer.
And choreographer.
She has been with the troupe a long time.
Yes.
But only Sherry and I are the producers.
Oh, okay.
As you know, Lisa, I do some other things in theater.
I do.
With this group, I am just purely a performer, and I love it.
A PP, as we call it.
You've choreographed. Yes. Yeah.
So this is a show called Dancing with Mary Jane.
Yes.
Somebody tell me about it.
Sharon, well, do you want to take it or do you want me to take it?
Yeah. We have actually been producing this show for, this is our 10th year.
Doing Dance with Mary Jane.
Yes. Specific show. Our troupe was actually founded in 2009. And our first, we do anti-Valentine's and our Halloween show. And our Dancing with Mary Jane, our first show for that was in 2013 at what was the Spider House Ballroom.
Oh, no.
Just the ballroom.
Just the ballroom.
Just the ballroom. But
so just when you think you get the sting out, you get another one. But now we're making new memories.
Well, I'm just curious. Who is this Mary Jane person you're talking about?
Well, you know, Mary Jane goes by many names.
She does, doesn't she?
Yeah. It's, you know, ganja, marijuana, yeah. Marijuana.
So, Mary Jane. So this is in honor of 420.
It is. It's an honor of 420, but it's also an honor of everything
debauchery.
Intoxicating.
All
debauchery.
Vices
all
and
vices.
Indulgences.
Yes. This is actually my first show even honoring her, because normally I do something completely different. You can be addicted to like the idea of drinking too much and indulging in love that's toxic or whatever. It doesn't have to just be about Mary Jane.
I'm addicted to offstage and on the air.
And that you can make an act to easily. Mm-hmm. Easily.
So what? Tell us about the show itself. What can folks expect to see?
The unexpected.
Okay, great. Thanks for bringing
that.
Well,
that is the Bat City Bombshell show.
Well,
you never know.
See, the Bat City Bombshells is a very diverse troupe.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
We have people of all ages, all ethnicities, genders, races, and body types.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... that's one thing I really love about our troupe is every act is very different and every performer definitely has their own character that is very unique.
Yep. So it's individual acts.
Plus well, some group
we
acts.
We have some group acts, yes.
Well, I mean individual acts,
and
which
yes.
might be
oh, yes, 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 yes. Apologies. And yeah. Speaking of theater shows, we may or may not be doing an opening number to one of the most popular Mary Jane themed musicals out there, Reefer Madness.
Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah.
So
you may or may not. Is it a secret?
It's not.
I mean, it's not a secret. You've all been informed now.
That's actually one of the few musicals that they did a decent movie version of from the stage play.
Great movie. Mm-hmm. So we were having a craft night, actually, and watching this film, and that is actually how that group act came to be. One of our members and other producers actually was just kind of like, I am going to make this on our stage. I am going to turn it into burlesque, and it will be fabulous. And it is.
And we said, great.
And yeah,
that's fantastic.
Here we are now.
Wonderful. Well, let me ask you, Moon, what are you going to be doing for the show?
Oh, I am actually going to be doing my first go-go style dance, actually, to a Mary Jane-inspired act by Rob Zombie called, I don't know if I can say it on the air, it's Shake Your and Smoke Your, you know.
Okay.
It's very timely as the new documentary, and he just premiered it here at South by Southwest. So, you're tying it all the way around there.
I'm a huge zombie fan.
So am I.
That is how I ended up choosing that for the show, actually. But in the past,
but he has a brand new documentary that just premiered like just a few weeks ago.
Good. I should watch it because I have no idea who that person is.
Awesome. Oh, wow. Really?
Hold on, I got to share. Violet, what are you doing? You actually shared this with me before, so those of us of a certain age are very excited about this.
I am a lover of the Beatles, and I'm doing...
Unfamiliar.
And I'm doing Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds as a balletic, hippie, dippy butterfly.
Oh, yeah.
That's beautiful, too. That's quite beautiful.
And I forgot to ask you, Moon, that's a solo act you're doing?
I am. I'm doing a solo.
Okay. And Violet, you're also doing a solo act.
I'm doing a solo. I'm opening the show.
You are opening the show.
Besides the opener.
Which may or may not be from Reefer Madness. And Sherry, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I'm doing something a little different. I am actually doing an act that celebrates what I call the showgirl drugs, which are our crafting drugs, because we are all in some way addicted to crafting.
It's
so
true.
Mine involves some glitter and rhinestones, maybe a little glue huffing. So it's, again, kind of along the lines of it's not just necessarily about Mary Jane. It's about all of those things that we are addicted to and things that bring us joy in that.
Oh, oh yeah. We've got, I think, a drunk rock star even as one of our characters that's in the show. There's a very Miami Vice.
Do you, so is the show, is there an MC that puts everything together?
Yes,
who's your MC?
Their name is Nico de Gallo. They are a spicy BB. we love them. They're also my burly child, so I'm extra special, like excited to have them join up. Uh-huh. They also host like some drag and some trivia around town as well, too.
Good.
So yeah, they're fantastic.
Excellent. Now, this is being done at Kick Butt Coffee.
It is. Yes,
and
it is.
I'm guessing they don't have a prohibition against glitter like most places.
Well, that's not necessarily a them thing. That's an us thing. We have a very strict no dumping glitter.
We do.
On the floor rule.
Well,
I have never had a rule like that, and I kind of like don't
there,
like rules, but
rules.
I kind of
There's
love
a
that
reason
rule.
That rule came yeah. to an existence.
You may or may not know, but I run a theater here in town, and we had a little show that one of you was involved in, and I'm still
picking up glitter,
mopping up glitter.
That's actually
it
a great rule.
Yeah, no, there's no.
So we will not
for
be held responsible
theater, no,
for backstage
no glitter,
glitter,
no popcorn.
Right.
Backstage glitter, I cannot.
Oh, no popcorn.
No popcorn.
I cannot and will not be responsible.
We come with our own vacuum cleaner.
We do.
Because we want to make sure that we're courteous to all the venues.
Yeah,
it's true.
It doesn't work, I'll tell you, but good. Well, that's great. Kick Butt Coffee, when is it performing?
It's going to be April 22nd. Mm-hmm. At, I think doors are 8 p.m., shows at 9. So that's mm-hmm. this Saturday, actually.
That's this Saturday.
Yeah.
And where can folks go to get more information?
You can either go to our Instagram, which is Bat City Bombshells. We also have a Facebook. We also have a website. There's also a website for Austin Burlesque in general. It's just austinburlesque.com. So there's many shows that are coming up.
So many
up.
Ways you can get there.
Yeah. BatCityBombshells.com.
Yes.
Great. Can I make the assumption that this might not be the kind of show that I want to bring my little child to?
All of our shows are 18 and up.
18 and up.
Yes.
Good.
Okay.
Yes.
Great. Well, wonderful. I'm so happy to have you on the show, and I hope this. I hope the show is so successful,
yeah.
and that you have got lots of people.
Happy
and you
10th
have a lot
anniversary
of fun.
On it too.
Thank
That's
you.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
And we only just did that math like a week
yeah,
ago when
yeah.
we were looking back at when did we do this yeah. show the first time, and we realized, oh my gosh, this is our 10th anniversary.
That's amazing.
Doing celebrating Mary
a decade
Jane.
Of debauchery.
Oh, great. Well, best of luck and best of time for all of that.
Awesome. Thank
you. Thank
you
so much.
That was Mistress Moon, Sherry Baum, and Violet Sky of Bat City Bombshells dancing with Mary Jane on the 22nd of this month. For more information, you have all those other things you said, but you can also go to thebatcitybombshells.com. And this is, I can't say the name of this song, but it's it could be what some folks call a cat. We'll be right back. You are continually listening to Offstage and On the Air, as you should. And we are going to welcome our next guests here from Jarrett Productions. The founder, artistic director, and the director of this piece, David Jarrett. Hi, David. Welcome back.
Hello, hello. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. And then we have one of the performers in the show, Catherine Schroeder. Welcome back, Catherine.
Thank you so much. Good to see you again.
Not only are you one of the performers, you are the titular performer.
I'm the mother.
This is the mother of the maid. Who are you the mother of?
Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc, yeah.
Yeah.
Met with a... Well, I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
So, David, tell us about the show. What is it?
Well, it's a show about Joan of Arc, but it's told through the mother's eyes. So it's a different perspective. It's not a history play. It's a contemporary play. It was written just a few years ago. I saw it in New York in 2018, and it's just a brilliant, lovely show that deals with the mother's unending love for her exceptional daughter. And I think it reminds everyone of the incredible love that most parents have for their children and what they would do for them. I can't say enough about how beautiful the words of the play are.
So who actually wrote those words?
Jane Anderson wrote the words, and she is quite a good playwright, but also she did the script for The Wife, which starred Glenn Close.
Okay.
And Glenn Close also played the mother in New York. And they were working on both of these projects at pretty much the same time.
So is it the public? Did you see Glenn Close in it?
I did.
Lovely.
Oh, that must have been
a
moment.
So, Catherine, those are pretty large shoes to fill.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I would have loved to have seen, after I performed mine, I would love to have seen what Glenn Close did. Not before, because then I'd be like, I was going to do that. Now I can't. But, the part is, written so strongly, so beautifully. You can't help but fall into it. You know, so I'm not really, it's a huge challenge, but I feel like I've internalized it, and it's due to Jane Anderson. She did the work for me.
Well, she certainly had enough time to work on it.
We're going to talk about that in just a second. But I think most people are familiar, at least tangentially, with the story of Joan of Arc, who she was and what happened to her. I don't think we know a lot about her mother. Does she have a name that we learn?
Yes, she does.
And tell us about the mother. Yeah. What kind of person is she?
Oh, Isabel is Isabel Arc. She's a very simple, strong, straightforward woman. She historically, although we're not worried about the historical aspect.
I'm not worried
aspect,
about
but,
that at
but
all.
But historically, she was a master weaver.
Oh,
she was wonderful. They had a sheep farm, and she had plenty of wool to work with, and apparently she just was really good at it. But that's not important to the play. It's just interesting.
It's a cool fact.
It's a cool fact.
I was
exactly.
obsessed with Joan of Arc
as a teen. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It was like this crazy. My mom was like, boy, and I'm like, something, I don't know, spoke to me.
Yeah.
And so I went down all these rabbit holes. Yeah. Those things are so fascinating.
Yeah. Well, that's Isabel is just, she is the ultimate mother. That's the name of the play, and that's the name of the game. She is Joan's mother, and everything she does is because of that.
And you're prepared to let us hear a little bit of that, aren't
you?
Yes,
I am.
That's exciting.
Okay, great. Does this need to be set up at all?
We can set it up just a little bit. As I said, the play is a contemporary take on the Joan of Arc tale, and so in several instances in the play, we break the fourth wall, and we do it right at the very start of the play. The only person who really does that is the mother, but she does speak to the audience.
I call her Isabel.
And the first scene, these are the words that she says right at the first of the play when you are introduced to
her. That's a good thing we're not spoiling anything.
That's right.
So this is Catherine Schroeder with assistance by David Jarrett from Jarrett Productions' production of Mother of the Maid.
Isabel Arc is a God-fearing woman. She can neither read nor write, and her skirts smell ripe as cheese. But she can do all sorts of handy things, such as gutting a lamb, a lance in a boil, and hiding the family valuables during a raid. She has never blamed God for a blessed thing. When she lost her baby daughter to the bloody flux, she barely shed a tear. Well, not that she didn't love the child. She knows that motherhood is a numbers game, and you're bound to lose a few before you're done. Isabel is grateful to have a daughter as healthy and hardy as her Joan. She's grateful for her sons, who are healthy and hardy as well. She's grateful that the English haven't slaughtered them all like they did with the Lebecs. Nancy Lebec was her best friend, and they gossiped and laughed while they spun. Isabel badly misses her friend, and sometimes Isabel wishes that her Joan would be a little more chatty. But still, Isabel Arc counts her blessings. Grateful, grateful, grateful. That's what Isabel tries to be.
I like that.
Wonderful. I thought David was going to jump in with something.
I can jump right in and say that the next time that Isabel breaks the fourth wall is later in the first act. And this is a long show, longer than what we normally do. We normally do these 75 to 80 minute shows with no intermission.
God bless
this
you.
Yes, I know. As an audience member, I love them too. This is a full two acts. You're going to get your money's worth on this one, I'll guarantee you. But she, after Joan goes to the court of the Dauphin, Isabel decides that she needs to go and check up on her daughter. And this is her speech when she's arriving
Lovely.
At the court.
Isabel Arc walked 300 miles to see her girl, praying the whole way she wouldn't get lost or killed. She walked over rocks. She walked through mud. She walked in storms that left her soaked to the skin. She beat back dogs who bit at her heels. She walked on knees that screamed in their sockets. She walked on blisters that ate at her toes. 'Twas nothing to her when she thought of her girl who'd be there at the gates to welcome her in. They'd walk together, arm in arm, through the court. They'd show all those so-and-sos what the Ark women are made of. But when Isabel finally got to the castle, the guards wouldn't let her through. While they looked for someone to speak for her, they made her stand in the gutter for half the day till they opened the gates and let the soggy old woman in.
That's wonderful. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. And as you hinted at just moments ago, this was on the boards for pre-pandemic, was it not?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Yes. We're playing catch-up, as are many theater companies in mm-hmm. town. We were about 10 days away mm-hmm. from opening this show in 2020 when everything got shut down, as yeah. you know.
Yep.
And sadly, along the way, in the journey over the past 3 years, because we knew at some point we were going to bring this back, we lost some of our original cast and sure. some of our original designers, but we have a marvelous cast. Yeah, we have marvelous yeah. designers. And
I was kind of, whoa, but the replacements, they're
we
like...
We don't call them replacements.
No. But the people who are doing
Your
it
current
now,
cast
the current
cohort.
Cast are... They are the bomb.
They are the bomb.
I like
that's
it.
Good.
They are the bomb.
Well, sounds like a lot of fun, and it is two acts, which is actually probably something we should be saying these days because so many shows, contemporaneous shows or contemporary shows specifically, are going to that 75-minute formula.
Yeah.
We just did a show for Fusebox that was 55 minutes.
Ooh.
It was great.
Yeah.
That's so, but that's that is exciting. And you also we meet Joan as well, do we not?
In we
this
do.
This. So what other what other characters are there? We just got a couple minutes left.
The Ark family also includes Daniel Norton, who plays Jacques, the father, and Christopher Gonzalez, who plays Pierre, the son and brother of Joan. Joan is played by a newcomer. This is her professional Austin Theater debut.
Yay.
Her name is Alyssa Hurtado. She is a recent graduate of Round Rock High School, and the second time that we've gone to Round Rock High School and found someone for one of our productions. She is currently a freshman at Texas State University. Mm. The other two members of our cast include Rosalind Ferris, who plays the Lady of the Court, and Beau Paul, who plays multiple characters, chiefly Father Gilbert. So it's a wonderful cast, and we're
boy,
just very
I
excited.
Love that Rosalind's on the stage back behind the scenes and back on the stage again.
I
love
she's
it.
So
she's
wonderful.
Good.
Fantastic.
When does the show open?
Show opens this Friday. We have a preview performance tomorrow night.
Day
we open
after
on
tomorrow.
Friday. This Friday.
Yay.
and it's at Ground Floor Theater.
I've heard of it.
Have you heard of that?
I have.
Yes.
So you open this Friday the 21st, and then how long do you play? When
we
do you
play
close?
Through Saturday, May the 6th. Evening performances at 7:30. We have three matinees at 2:30. Two of them are on the Sunday, and one of them is actually Saturday. Our final
one.
Final performance.
We love two show days.
Yes,
we love those.
Love them.
Well, great. I look forward to seeing the show.
Yeah.
And where can folks go to get information?
At JarrettProductions.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
You
are quite welcome. That was David Jarrett and Catherine Schroeder of Jarrett Productions, production of Mother of the Maid at Ground Floor Theater from the 21st of this month through May 6th. For more information, you may visit jarrettproductions.com. And this song is called A Mother's Love. And,
what's it from?
It's from a show called A Mother's Love, which I had to look up. Do you know who Candy something from The Real Housewives of Atlanta created a musical?
It's Candy Burris. Mm.
Candy Burris. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? I even wrote it down there. Candy Burris.
The woman's won a lot of Grammys for writing a lot of big hits.
Well, she had a tour of this that got canceled at the last minute. Whole nother story. Very Rebecca-esque.
She's a big producer
on Broadway.
But
here is A Mother's Love.
I'm going to hear it.
I love you more than I love myself. That's what a mother's love is.
We are back. This is Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. And that was just a wonderful discussion with David Jarrett and Catherine Schroeder. And let's just talk about local stuff, which we normally do before this point, but we wanted to make sure we got enough of Mother of the Maid. And you guys, David and Catherine, you are welcome to stay for this section, but you don't have to. We're talking local stuff.
Oh, I feel local.
Okay, good. Then I'm glad that you are going to stay. I just wanted to talk, first of all, and this is something that I'm sure you will be able to help with, Nicole. Zach just announced their season, and it's quite an impressive season this year.
I have, disclaimer, I was working on it, so mm-hmm. I've been writing, so I've known for a while, but I am personally excited about this season myself.
Yeah, I am of mixed feelings, but it is certainly ambitious. Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff, and do you want to tell folks some of the highlights?
I think we'll both be highlighting some different stuff. So it'll kick off the season with Hershey Felder doing the George Gershwin. And he hasn't done Gershwin in a long time. And this is something he's been doing around. He had it on the shelf for a while and has been doing it again recently. So he's just fascinating at how he looks at composers. And it's just shocking when you realize Gershwin passed away in his early 30s and how much he didn't do. Yeah, it's just crazy. Then Lucas Haunts the Thin Place, which is fantastical. That's like murder mystery. It's talking about the Thin Place, which is that line against where we are living in the world and the other world and the other side. I mean, it uses an illusionist to give you the ending. So it's like a scary movie, but in a theater, which isn't normal in a theater. Yeah, so like, I'm really excited about
that. We don't have a lot more time left. So.
Beautiful, the Carole King musical. Hello, The Great Comet. Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812. Very excited
about
that one. But that's not next season. I'll get to that in a second.
There's
a whole bunch of other stuff. But then closing out this season was already, it's been on there for a while. It's Head Over Heels, written by the Go-Go's. And Kathy Valentine is going to be musical director and be in it and pick the all-star female band.
Cool. Awesome. Ooh. Lots of stuff at Zach. And you can get information at zachtheater.org. Other things playing right now are Luchadora at St. Ed's. It plays just this weekend. I'm going to try to get it to this weekend. Cat in the Hat will finally go off the list on the 23rd
it's
of this
so,
month.
Jason is so great in that.
Jason's one.
And then we have Row, which opens on the...
It's playing.
It's opened on the 5th through the 30th of this month. Mm-hmm. Winter's Tale, still, Baron's Men, closes on the 29th. And then I put in Row twice. That's how much I want to see it. We just talked about Mother of the Maid is playing through May 6th. Indecent at Austin Playhouse is playing from starting this weekend on the 21st through the 14th. And that's a show that we've all been talking about.
That was one that was also postponed.
It was indeed. So lots of stuff to see. I'm going to just blast through today in theater history, or maybe I'm not going to. No, I'm not going to. But I am going to take a break and play the song that we were going to play from theater history, which is from Carousel, because it has an anniversary.
Well, can I say one birthday, happy birthday to one person? Tim Curry.
Okay, Tim Curry, hello. He was on the list, but...
I'm not going to let it
This happen. Is Lindsay Mendez and oh God, what's her name? Lindsay Mendez and Jesse Mueller singing Mr. Snow. We'll be right back.
You're a queer one, Julie Jordan. You are quieter and deeper than a well. And you never tell me nothing. There's nothing that I care to choose to tell. You've been acting most peculiar. Every morning you're awake ahead of me.
We are back. You know what? I should say that some of the... I should have just done the Today in Theater History. Other birthdays, Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
Tim Curry, we already saw Jonathan Tunick. Other openings, Fun Home, Clybourne Park, My Fair Lady, The Revival, Carousel, we just heard from, and The Producers. And then opening tonight, Peter Pan Goes Wrong.
Yes. MPH is
MPH.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, well, don't forget the MPH.
So he plays this is one of these revolving roles that he's going to be in for a few weeks, but he is opening it up.
He likes to do that.
Yep. So we've done it again. We've got John Hoffner, who is chomping at the bit to get here for his show, the Austin Common Radio Hour, which is going to shift a little bit starting in June, and we'll talk about that later. He's coming up right here on Co-op, and Nicole, I totally forgot your name. Nicole and I will talk to y'all next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air for my final Phantom number. I cannot pronounce this, but it is all I ask of you in Hungarian.
Oh.
It looks like Inyit Kerik In.
Okay.
Nailed it.
But if Kim Simpson were here,
he would tell you.
He would have gotten it, yep. And I didn't. So we'll see y'all next week, folks. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Rémült órák könnyét, én felszárítom mind. Ne félj, melletted állok, csak egy szavadra várok.